Welcome, children. Join me on this adventure into the abyss as we learn about some peculiar creatures.
Little gray men, oh, how they probe. Come, commence and fear of the unknown. Bigfoot might be an alien, but Steven says he's a Wendigo. Josh and Lynn keeping it real. Then now you see this a dirty homo.
Welcome to the Water Babies Podcast.
And that was ringworms invading my mind. Small supernovas by Bob. We are the Water Babies Podcast, and we've been out for a while, so I'm out of practice for that. I'm your host, Joshua Weimer, joined by...
Okay, no. No, no. No, 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 no. What? You are not the main host.
Yeah, I intro right, it. That kind of means that I am the main host. And we are starting out real strong with our arguments if you're going to be
like we might like be partners, but if you're not seeing it that way.
So fine. Then... Okay. I am your co-host, Josh Weimer, joined by my two other co-hosts.
Yeah, we are definitely starting strong immediately. You two peak everything.
I am the main co-host, Lindsay Weimer.
Oh, we didn't talk about any of this. Restructuring our podcast on air. What other co-host, what's your name?
No, I'm the main one. You two are co-hosts. I'm the main host.
I will stab you both. You know, it's like...
I mean,
like,
I do most of the talking here.
Okay, who has main character energy?
You do most of the talking right now for this argument, but then when everything else we talk about, it's like, Josh is always talking, so... We are a cryptozoology podcast where each, however... long it takes us to get together, we discuss a cryptid and then afterwards get into some bull crap that really doesn't add anything or take anything away from the cryptid, rather just gives you a insight into our insanity.
Yeah, that's the main character energy. Yeah. Sure.
Lindsay, what is your segment?
So I'm doing something a little different with my segment today. First off, I want to give a shout out to our unofficial hosts. They're not actually our hosts, but I feel like they give us...
I'm going to play you off. You need to get to it.
Albertsons and Dutch Brothers. Like, I don't think we have done a podcast without having run to those two.
Bigs up.
Yeah,
big ups,
like, we appreciate you guys so much. Thanks for feeding us and giving us coffee. Okay, selling us coffee. And then secondly, it is a no bones day, so...
I will...
But Noodles the Pug got canceled this week, so we're good.
That was for his views about the Jews, right?
I think it was because he was chuggy.
Do your segment.
That was
my
segment.
My God, do your segment.
That was my segment.
That was your segment?
I told you it was going to be different this week.
It was definitely different. Like it was the same as in, like, it had no...
segmenty part?
I told Stephen before I came in that my segment this week was going to be to annoy you.
Well, oh, we're at least,
I missed that part.
We're going according to plan. I can't say anything beyond that. So now we have done Lindsay's other unnamed segment. Stephen... What is our cryptid for today?
Our cryptid for today is going to be the Amphirleithmore.
Wow. No idea what that is. That is totally alien to me.
Do you know about the Ben MacDhui mountain range in Scotland?
I'm going to slap the crap out of both of you. Don't.
I am so happy we are doing a Scotland episode.
No, I do not. I don't.
I'm so confused. Do you not like that name?
Oh no, it's just like, you push up my glasses that don't exist. Do you know about the Back MacDhui range of mountains, you freaking pleb?
Well, I feel like you usually know so much more about that stuff than I do, so.
This is actually, for me, I have not heard of any of these things so far.
All right.
I'm pretty stoked.
I guess we'll start with the mountain range, because it's really tied in specifically to this one mountain range, which is the Ben MacDhui mountain range. So the Amphirleithmore is also called the Grey Man, or the Big Grey Man of Ben MacDhui So it has like 18 names, and they all are pretty much Big Gray Man of Ben McDewey Mountain Range. And this is in Scotland. This mountain is the second highest in Scotland and the British Isles. And it
What's the highest?
I forget. I read it once and I forget. But it's the highest mountain of the Cairngorm Mountains. There's like a mountain range called the Cairngorm Mountains, and it's the highest peak on that mountain range. It's pretty much just all rock and snow because it's freezing, and then it's almost always foggy up there. The Fearless Moor, the first encounter was back in 1891.
I'm sorry, I gotta interrupt you for something that always comes up in these. Does anybody find it the least bit like suspicious that like almost every single one of these like cryptids or whatever is always prefaced with like, it's found in a region where you can only see 3 feet ahead of you. And then no one blinks an eye. Like, this is just normal things.
Isn't that where they would hide, though?
That's kind of how I always see it.
All right. You
oh, that is that does remind me. So this mountain range is considered one of the wildest and most remote places left in Britain.
Cool.
So it's actually a pretty...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm actually very stoked about this.
Okay. I'm going to interrupt for a different reason. I am very annoyed right now because the whole time I've been here, I've been waiting for Scrub to wake up so I could play with him for a minute and like hang out with him and get him out of his tank. He just woke up while we're doing something.
Yep.
The viewers needed to hear that.
It's heavily fogged inside of my house and we can't really see what's going on. But... the famed Mac Dam Dewey Scrub just awoke and came out of his lair. Might be our pet bearded dragon, or might be a cryptid.
All right, first encounter was back in 1981 or 1991.
Oh wow, that's a recent one.
Yeah, a professor named Norman Colley. He went hiking along the mountain alone and heard something walking behind him. He didn't mention anything about this for another 34 years. So 34 years later, he actually. Finally wrote about the encounter, and this is what he said. I was returning from the cairn on the summit in a mist when I began to think I heard something else than merely the noise of my own footsteps. Every few steps I took, I heard a crunch, and then another crunch as if someone was walking after me but taking steps 3 or 4 times the length of my own. I said to myself, this is all nonsense. I listened and heard it again but could see nothing in the mist. As I walked on, the eerie crunch, crunch sounded behind me. I was seized with terror and took to my heels, staggering blindly among the boulders for 4 or 5 miles, nearly down to Rothmerkis Forest. Whatever you make of it, I do not know, but there is something very queer about the top of Ben McDewey, and I will not go back there again. So that's the first recorded encounter.
Wow. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So... This is a kind of a tangent, but so I give a lot of crap to a bunch of different places and maybe states, and there's one in particular state that I do have ill feelings against, but in general it's just me being a loudmouth. So if I've ever said anything bad against Scotland, I apologize, because I actually have a lot of love and respect for Scotland. We have a listener there, and I think that's super tight. So I didn't know this at the beginning of the podcast. This is going out to them. If you have any more information about this, send us a message, but keep going. Sorry.
I don't think you have said anything bad about Scotland.
That's one of the few places on earth. A lot of love and respect for Scotland, truly.
Well, I was just thinking that it sounds really cool the way he was describing it, you know? Like
it's very area. Eerie.
Yeah, and that's just the tip of the iceberg.
You picture the like you're walking through like a shale field or something, and there's mm-hmm. mist everywhere and being stalked by something.
Yeah.
That is... so eerie.
Yeah. Once he wrote this, it kind of stirred on people start coming out of the woodworks telling about their encounters. One of the more well-known one is a guy named Hugh D. Welsh. He said that he hiked the summit with his brother in 1904, where throughout the day and night they heard slurring footsteps as if someone was walking through water-saturated gravel. Both felt as they said, oh, my writing's terrible. So they said that they both felt frequently conscious of something nearer us, an eerie sense of apprehension. And so this is an interesting to keep in mind with a lot of these stories and a lot of other stories beyond what I'm about to go through. one of the common themes, and it's not always, but one of the more common themes is that they never see the creature, but there's always this random sudden panic and fear, or just major mood swing to like extreme depression. There are some where they see encounters and stuff, but
so is this more of a like a flesh and blood type creature? Is this a spirit? Because right now it's almost sound more like a spirit.
I don't know. I guess that'd be up to you guys to find out, because that's one of the things I was going to ask you after I go through these stories, is what you guys think it is. Huh. Because some people call it like the Scottish Yeti, and then other people say that it's more demonic, or other people say it's in like otherworldly or whatever. There's so many weird aspects to it. It's one of the more mysterious ones that I've seen, because there isn't really a hard this is what it is. So I'm going to go through a few of these stories. The author of The 39 Steps, John Buchan, was walking in 1910 through a wood of pine trees on the Alps in Bavaria, which I believe is close to there.
No, it's in Germany.
Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Okay. There were a couple where they did spread out, but for the most part, most of these encounters are specifically on this place. Interesting. And that's another part of the intrigue, because some, like, they had encounters that weren't, like, in the mountain or on the mountain. They had them, like, somewhere else. And then they were, like, suddenly more visible. Like, they saw this big, giant creature with talons and stuff and just weird things. But they didn't really, they almost just sounded like something completely different. But they had tied it to the Fearless Moor.
Wow.
But anyway, so this guy, his story was interesting. So he was walking through the Alps with another local forester, and then suddenly both of them were overcome at the same instant by a feeling of panic. Neither of them spoke, but they ran together down to the valley below, where they collapsed from exertion. In 1945, Peter Densham was participating in rescue work in the Cairngorm Mountains during World War II. One day, he reported the hearing strange noises, mist closing in on his location and increasing pressure around his neck. He fled before seeing anything concrete. Climber Richard Freer, this is one of the more popular ones too, wrote about his sense of a presence, utterly abstract but intensely real, on the mountain, and heard an intensely high singing note. A few years later, in 1948, Freer also presented the encounter of a mutual friend who wished to remain anonymous, who decided to spend a night camping on the top of the mountain in 1940. In his tent near the Cairn, he began to suffer a feeling of morbidity and a sense of unreality, but finally fell asleep. He woke up with the moonlight shining through a gap into his tent, and suddenly realized that he could see something brownish between himself and the moon. Horrified, he froze and waited for the thing to move away. When it did, he looked out into the brilliant moonlight and saw a large brown creature swaggering away down the mountainside. He said the creature had an air of insolent strength about it. Incredibly, he estimated the height of the thing to be 20 feet and described it as having an erect posture, broad shoulders, and a tapering waist.
That one was really interesting, because did you say that was in 1940?
Yeah.
So
one thing that's really compelling for me for this one is like, it does echo to a lot of my own experiences backpacking or camping out in the middle of nowhere and like kind of the really out of the way places that are got an extra oeuvre of feeling going on.
Yeah, and you don't always see something, but it's just like a feeling of unease. I think we've talked about a lot where, you know, you don't.
Well, what I was really going to hone in on was his him talking about the feeling, like you described it as morbidity and unease as he was trying to go to sleep until like he fell asleep. That has got to be one of the worst feelings on earth, of where you're trying to go to bed, sleep somewhere where you feel uneasy, and like you rather than actually just like falling asleep because you're tired, where you like you force yourself to go to sleep out of like almost self-defense, where you're just like you're in such a bad headspace where you're either like, I have to get up and protect myself for whatever reason, or I have to fall asleep so I can ignore this. That is such a bad way to be.
I know. I love it when backpackers are like, oh yeah, I just lay down and go to sleep. I can never go to sleep right away out in the wilderness.
Well, it's not a constant thing for me, but.
But it's just never a right away thing for me either.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A couple more stories. Another one that's more well known. In 1958, naturalist and mountaineer Alexander Townion published an article in the Scots magazine about an encounter with a grave man in 1943. I spent a 10-day leave climbing alone in the Carrigorms. One afternoon, just as I reached the summit cairn of Ben MacDooey, mist swirled across the Lairigru and enveloped the mountain. The atmosphere became dark and oppressive. A fierce, bitter wind whisked among the boulders, and an odd sound echoed through the mist. A loud footstep, it seemed. Then another and another. A strange shape loomed up, receded, came charging at me. Without hesitation, I whipped out the revolver and fired three times at the figure. When it still came on, I turned and hared down the path, reaching Glendary in a time that I have never bettered. You may ask, was it really the Fearless Moor? Frankly, I think it was. And that was his article.
So, sorry, is this summit called Cairn?
No, so a cairn is a rock formation. Hmm. It's like it's a man-made pile of rocks, pretty much, to make a marker. And so they put it at the marker at the the end of, or at the top.
Because I had a theory for a second. I thought it was like all the bad Cairn energy or something.
No,
but no, if it's the mountain, a common phrase there. Then...
The mountain is called Ben MacDooey.
Okay.
One of the more creepy ones, or I don't know, it seemed creepy to me. Oh, actually, this is a little bit of information that was interesting too. They actually took, or there was a photographer and somebody else who went up there and found footprints, one measuring 19 inches at long and 14 inches wide, and they were about like 5 feet apart. So it just gave credence to that there is something up there. But he later discovered that they were a natural phenomenon caused by rainfall eroding the snow. So
I was going to ask where they took the measurements from.
Yeah,
because that's one that comes up a lot, is if it's in snow, it's really hard to actually take good.
So here's a couple that were interesting. A man named Affleck Gray, author of The Big Gray Man, wrote this in one of his books, I'm assuming. Says, when I reached Carreor, I was soaked through, and as the weather showed no inclination to improve, I decided to stay. That night, as I dozed in front of the fire, the inner door was closed, but the outer one was wide open. Suddenly, I heard it close. Curious, I went to investigate and found the door tightly barred. The only means of getting out was by squeezing through the small hinged window, having come to the simple conclusion that a sudden gust of wind had slammed the door. But I still cannot explain today my action of re-entering the body by the window. The only possible explanation I can give is that it was prompted by some unrecognized primitive fear. So it's another one where just this random fear.
Like the instinct just to get out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The way he was describing that was really confusing me. I still don't really understand what is going on in that scene, but the last part made more sense. Another one in a cottage. A woman had been staying in a cottage in the countryside near there, that area. She had seen a dark, hairy figure standing just inside the tree line nearby, watching the buildings on two occasions. After a while, it moved off into the undergrowth. And that's how a lot of these stories are. They're just like quick little things. Or they're just sudden fears and they run away. One of the more recent ones, and very different ones, was in the early 1990s. A group of three men walked along a forestry plantation track in the countryside close to Aberdeen. Now, where is that?
It's in Scotland.
Okay.
I disagree. I'm pretty sure it's like an hour away from here.
Yeah,
yes, Aberdeen, Idaho. Just outside of Blackfoot.
Yep. I was like, I have no idea where it is in Idaho. I just know it's a small town close to here.
I used to work there. I've been in almost every basement in Aberdeen.
Didn't you feel like a big sense of doom when you were there?
Actually, I loved Aberdeen.
Oh, really?
It was like one of my favorite small towns I've ever been into. Like, I liked it more than Manan.
Oh, wow.
See, this is why
there's less Mormons there. Mormon burn. Da, 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 da.
This is why I asked if you knew the Mountain of MacDooey.
Because he worked in Aberdeen. Yeah, no,
because you just know all this stuff. Oh. Like, where is Aberdeen? It's in Scotland. Oh, there's also Aberdeen, Idaho.
I think that Aberdeen is actually there. I think there is, it's one of those places where there's an Aberdeen in every single state in the United States, too.
Oh, really?
But it's also a major city in Scotland.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, so one of them saw a dark human-shaped figure run from the left of the track to the right about 200 yards ahead. he felt a sense of terror and foreboding. His friends had not seen the creature, but when they looked ahead, they saw a face looking at them from between the branches, a face which was, as they said, human but not human. One man threw a stone at it, and it disappeared into the trees. A few weeks after this encounter...
The face or the stone disappeared into the trees?
Yeah, I'm assuming the face. I mean, the stone less probably it, definitely...
Less impressive if it's the stone. craziest thing, man. I threw the stone, and it just disappeared into the trees like nothing I've seen before.
I don't know if you throw stones at trees very often, but that was...
Usually they come back around and hit me in the head.
Anyways.
Sixth rule.
A few weeks after this encounter, the trio were driving towards Torfinns near Aberdeen when their car was pursued by the very same type of creature. They reported this dark, tall being running alongside their car as they drove at a close to 45 miles per hour. Eventually, it gave up the chase and simply stood in the middle of the road and peered after the car. So that's one where it's so different that I'm like, I would almost say that's just a different cryptid. I don't know why I don't know why they tie it to
same area, same oeuvre, same feeling around it. Probably.
Have you guys heard of the Uncanny Valley?
It's a mental state, right? Rather than
it's the feeling of fear when you see something that looks human but is not human.
Isn't it like specifically applied to like animatronics and cartoons and things like that?
Mannequins, hyper-realistic dolls. So whenever you say a face that looks human and not human, but is not, but not quite human, I always think of that because it's like, what if the reason we're afraid of these things, like mannequins, is because there is something out there that makes us feel afraid, you know? I don't know. I always just find that interesting.
Yeah. What did you say that the syndrome was?
Uncanny Valley. It's like the area that lays between human and not human.
I think it's actually to describe a chart, right?
Yeah. Where it's...
Oh, okay.
Because, you know, there's the cartoons that look very cartoonish, and you know that's supposed to represent a human, but it doesn't look human enough.
And there are people that are afraid of that?
Well, like, I don't know, when you see like a mannequin or a doll that looks pretty realistic, does it ever make you feel a little uncomfortable?
Well, I think it's more than that. It's, I think where I hear most related to practically is like how much you relate to something. Did you ever watch Beowulf? There's like a CGI cartoon basically.
Yeah, I've known like, of it, but I've never seen it. It was almost
hyper-realistic, where it was actually where it was like they tried to make it so realistic, but it like ended up actually taken away from the movie because it was so like similar. That there is this like once you like anthropomorphize something to the point it becomes actually unrelatable because it's close enough but not quite right. But then you go to the other extreme where it's like Lindsay was saying, like a cartoon that is meant to be human but is not very human, like Simpsons, somehow makes it more relatable and easier to tolerate, is what I hear.
Interesting.
The most.
I know that, like...
I don't think that's what we're talking about here.
No, I'm just saying the human but not quite human face kind of reminded me of it.
So what are your guys's... I would say first, what do you think that it could possibly be?
So this is one of the most interesting ones to me because it does harken back to so many of my own experiences in the wilderness that I find it completely compelling. And it does boil back to like a lot of, because of that, it boils down to a lot of my own experiences of me trying to explain stuff away versus what it actually could be. So I am very torn right now as to, is it your own mind playing with you? And because you're in this like weird isolation area and it is somewhere where the visibility is limited.
It is a very eerie place.
Your mind plays trick on you.
Yeah.
Or is it actually something there? And that is one of the biggest things that makes me super curious about these is my own experiences there.
I do know
not quite right.
One of the more common ones too, which I already went through with some of those stories, is where they hear the footsteps. And I actually missed one of them, but there's another story where they hear the footsteps it sounds like something is walking behind them, but it's not keeping up with their own pace, or it's like very off from what their own footsteps are. So
it's
makes
not
it,
like an echo or anything.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it almost sounds more paranormal or extraterrestrial than like an actual creature like an actual cryptid, because
when they have described it, it's usually just like it sounds like a Scottish rock yeti or something.
Yeah,
some gray furry big thing.
Right.
Right, but like the fillings of bread usually, and everything that come with it.
Yeah, it's exactly. Just... And in my experience, or from what I've noticed with a lot of these kind of things, is if there's a feeling of dread and terror that suddenly accompanies the creature, it usually is in the paranormal realm.
Right.
Which is where I lean to with this, is I would much less flesh and bones, way more.
Well, especially
supernatural.
Because there's far less sightings, like actual sightings, and a lot more of hearing and feeling things.
Yeah,
it is very interesting. The one of them that was really compelling to me was being in the car and feeling like something's chasing you, because that's like an extra level of fear. It's one thing when you are not in a shelter of any kind and are afraid, but if you are in a locked car driving and you feel fear, it's an extra layer, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things with the car, they, like for me at least, it's a lot more common that these like these weird fears come on, because when you're in a car, it's like your world only exists during the night, at least. Your world only exists in your high beams, you know, what's in front of you in that like small area. So even like what is in your back seat is alien and kind of weird. And so that is a super common one for me. Driving around, like especially back roads with like lots of twists and turns, where like there's all this, like there could be something right behind me, or just like something saw me on this side of a curve and now I'm on the other side of the curve and it cut across and it could be right there out my door side, and I wouldn't really be able to tell till it was right there, because my world right now exists in the 40 feet ahead of me that my headlamps can illuminate.
So that one
that's another weird one.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't even think about that.
Is psychology to me so much more than anything else.
Yeah, because I was thinking, you know, like when I'm alone at night, I'm like, get to my car, make sure no one's in it, and lock the doors. And once you're locked in the car, you're safe. But you're right, when you're driving alone at night, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is much less funny than normally is, but this
it's more interesting because
it does pique my interest so much more, because so many of these stories are just like mirroring my own experiences so much that it's cool to listen to.
So another interesting correlation that people have made is that it seems like the thing is like guarding something, because some people have wondered, well, why is it running people off? Because it doesn't chase them past a certain point. It's like as soon as they start running away, then they just don't see it or feel it anymore. And there's a lot of people who believe that the McDewey is actually a window area, which it would be a dimension where there's a crossing between alternate worlds. And so that thing is the guardian of whatever, wherever that is.
Interesting.
And that's a really cool theory.
Yeah. That's what some people think is what's going on there. It sounds like both of you are either agreeing that it is real or isn't real.
Oh, are you done with your story?
Yeah.
I guess now it's time for unpopular opinion about popular cryptids. Yay! Everyone shut up.
I don't want to now. I was already done talking, but like, don't tell me to shut up. It doesn't end well.
Shut up. It's so the Hodag. Well. All right, this week I'm going to be tackling the Hodag. Not literally, because I don't think it's real. I'm putting it out there. Screw you all for thinking that it's real. Now, the Hodag...
What is the Hodag?
I'm about to explain that. I said, now the Hodag...
Come on, what man. About the Hodag?
Stick up with me. Stay up. So the Hodag, I can basically describe it as a giant caterpillar with a buffalo's head. And it happens down south a lot. So my theory about the Hodag... The only reason it's created so that all these like charming, like backwoodsy types down south can just like go around, watch them or the goddamn Hodag, man. Watch your back, man. We're gonna do a Hodag.
That's the only reason I've heard it before. I didn't until you did that accent. I was like, I know that word, but
this is not adding anything to the segment. So once we get into the realm of creating things just to further our own charm, we are really in dangerous area. So what I'm thinking is that there are so many things in this world that are so much more concrete that we can actually glean onto. We don't have to be creating more things. So the Hodag, why did it even have to come about? It's like the most improbable monster ever, where, again, it's a caterpillar, giant caterpillar with a buffalo's head. How is there any room in the world for something like that where we wouldn't be able to find it? Why is that something compelling just so you'd be like, the Hodag ate my pork and beans. Yeah, buddy. It's like, because everyone down south sounds like Sling Blade, I think. So just
blame it on the opossum instead.
Just cling on to what's actually down there. Just like, it's a god dang racist. Yeah, buddy. Don't go there after dark because, you know, you're not totally white. I'll throw that out there. Don't go down there. Yeah, buddy. That's much worse. That is not even like a joke. That's just like a real scary thing that exists. We don't have to bring the Hodag into this. Don't freaking bring stuff up and create crap just to be making yourself more charming when we have real things to deal with. Okay? And that concludes my segment.
Okay.
Didn't plan that at all, and I don't think you could tell.
I was actually about to ask, do you plan these things in advance or?
Oh, it's kind of a thing. A lot of times it's the stream of consciousness where, like, before this, I was thinking about a word, and then that led me to Hodag.
No.
Don't even know what word I was thinking about. All right. So, Lynn, what are your thoughts on this?
I find it very reasonable to believe that it would be real. I believe that it could be something paranormal, maybe warning away from an area, like that one theory, or something like that. I don't know. What about you?
Because I'd like to continue hiking and hunting, I'm going to go ahead and say it's fake.
Okay.
And you're letting your crazy girl mind running away from you and just get your
You crack could have together. Just left it at you are going to say that it's fake. You
yeah,
know?
But content, man. Content.
But
so I am not a believer in the paranormal. So one thing I'm always super curious when people talk about it being a spirit. You said a spirit of past. Do you mean like of a human that used to be there or of an entity? Or do you think it's actually something just like totally otherworldly that is now inhabiting that land? Like something that was never flesh and blood. It was always just a spirit. That's always makes me curious when people talk about the paranormal.
All of this. It could be any of this. But I specifically, when I said a past spirit, was a person that died and spirit is still there. But I'm going to be honest, I don't know the history of Scotland before it was colonized, but there can be protective measures put in place from hundreds of years ago that are still in place. Okay, stop.
Wait, what?
it's humorous, everything that was going on, because Scotland's actually history. Keep going.
No, I don't know the history of Scotland is what I'm saying.
Well, obviously, you referenced 100 years ago, where hundreds of years ago, they would have been. But, so, I guess my theory on this, which is what I tell myself as I grip my backpack as...
Sorry, what was that?
I don't know. You're going to have to chop that together to make sense. Is my theory on it is what I always tell myself as I am hiking in the backwoods and I'm gripping my backpack's shoulder straps pretty tightly is that it's the eeriness of I'm used to there always being all this external stimuli of cars and things like that to where basically my mind is playing tricks on me. What's going on. So that is my theory of it, is it's not as much as there is actually something there. It is your mind saying that there should be something there, and the fact that you cannot see exactly what is going on, that vast void that is in that makes you feel uneasy and allows a lot of tricks to be played on you.
Yeah, I remember one time you and I went camping and we were sleeping under our little maid shelter. There was this thing that sounded like it was walking around behind me. And so every time I looked, there's nothing there, but it just kept like being there for like a good like 10, 15 minutes while I'm trying to fall asleep. And then suddenly it sounded like it just made a mad dash for me. And like, without even thinking, I grabbed my machete and just swung it at the ground and like stuck it into a tree like trunk thing, and there was like just nothing there. And I'm like, I totally was like, oh crap, there it is.
Right.
And then I never heard it again though. So I kind of just assume it was a little mouse or something, but at the time it did not sound like a mouse. And it was like, because it was going on for like 20 minutes before it finally escalated so far, it was like it just kept building up and building up into what the heck is this? And especially because I was in this half state of like, I'm tired and it's nighttime and I can't see in the dark and I want to go to sleep, but then can't go to sleep because of this thing.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things, it's one of my big enemies when I'm actually doing those type of things, is experiences like those. Because one of the crazy things, especially when you're like, you're setting up camp, when you've hiked in or even just like had to walk in a ways, is that when you walk through an area, it disturbs everything that has fallen naturally. So when it falls naturally, like stuff kind of settles and sits there. But once you walk through, it disturbs it. So like as it resettles, it like makes all these noises around you. This sounds so supernatural and crazy. And like, even if you're like, you're down in a bowl, all the crazy snaps and things you can hear just from your own disturbances walking through is so crazy. And like, that's not even taking into account wildlife being there.
Yeah.
It is like one of those things where you have to be vigilant to actually be watching what's going on around you. At the same time, you need to push it out of your mind to where you're actually able to function and do things. For me, that is like one of the double-edged swords of, I love the thought that there might be something out there.
Yeah.
It's like, that's one of the reasons I do this podcast, is like, it is so cool to me that there might be some crazy stuff out there. But then when you have to come to grips for a while to where it's like, I can't actually be thinking about that all the time.
Well, especially if you're out there.
Right.
There is another time, I don't know if I already told you that one or not, but there was one time when we went camping with our grandpa, and it was one of those campgrounds, so it had like the outhouses and stuff, or the porta potties or whatever. And one time I needed to go use the restroom, and so as I was going to it, you have to go through this like little, there was a small little stretch just before the porta potty that you had to walk through that was like completely dark. And it was almost like there was like an archway, but it wasn't. There's like just trees were just there. And so it just, you could not see anything in there. And for some random reason, because I was not in a state of like a fearful mind or anything. I was just like, oh, I'm going to go use the restroom, because I was having the time of my life because you were there and my grandpa was there, or our grandpa was there. But as soon as I reached the edge of that shadow, it was like this just instant, out of nowhere, just instant fear that I could not go through that dark area. And I was going to go through it. And then as soon as I was about to take my first step into it, I just couldn't do it. And I was like, what the heck? But I tried to force myself to go because I thought it was stupid, but I just could not. It was like this wall that would not let me go through there. So I just went around it and still went to the restroom, but I couldn't take that path. And a lot of times it makes me wonder, like, whenever I look back on that, I wonder if like there was actually something there, and like, you just don't know, like if the Lord was just like making sure I did not go that into that or whatever, because it was just so unnatural for me.
Right.
Which, and the other thing is, if it was just, sometimes I wonder if it was just my mind being dumb, but it seemed just so intense to be just my mind playing tricks on me.
Right. Yeah.
Do you ever have that where, but, and then later you realize it was just your mind playing tricks on you?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, so a little bit more about my background is, I've worked as a plumber in HVAC for 3 or 4 years. So in doing that, there's like all sorts of like crawl spaces and weird abandoned areas that you have to go into. They're just like dark and unhospitable. Sometimes they'll have leaks in them that make them, you know, where they're actually like filled with raw sewage or even just like mud. There's always like spiders or snakes and things like that, to where to convince yourself to go in there, it's like you actually have to overcome like a visceral thing. It gets easier the further you get in, where, and I get this sometimes even just hiking or doing things outdoors, is where you reach a point where like you feel this like thing on the back of your head. It's always like the back of my head. It's like, it feels like there's literally a hand holding me back from going any further. And you have to go like totally mind over matter, where you're just like, I have to go down this hole I have to do whatever. Mm. That even though like it's, you can talk yourself up and you can be like, it's just a crawl space, or it is just a dark place in the wood. It is just all these things. You can speak to yourself on a more physical level of being able to look at the stimuli that's going on and say like, there's no reason, it's eerie and there might be something kind of weird in there, but it's the worst case scenario. It's going to be a spider. But there'll still be that thing holding on the back of your head where it's just like, no, you can't do it. And yeah. You just like have to like, you have to go past that. And just like, all I can do to get over that is take the next step or push yourself into it. And then once you're committed and it kind of lightens up after a while.
Interesting.
I was going to say, even like really safe places, like last time I was house sitting for grandma. Obviously, I love grandma's house. Never felt freaked out there. It was when we were going to Yellowstone, and so I was meeting you all in Rexburg, and it was very cloudy, and there was no stars, and that walk from the front door to my car was probably one of the most terrifying walks I've ever had, which is stupid, but it was just, like, scary, and then the drive to Rexburg was one of the scarier drives I've had. Even though, because it was just so dark, like, I couldn't see. And
so, like, we talk about, like, the darkness of the woods a lot. But one thing that I think that kind of gets overstated is the darkness of the desert.
Oh, yeah.
How isolated and crazy and just, like, how laid bare you can feel out there. Is like, some of the most, like, visceral fears I have ever had was when I was doing stuff out in the desert at night in particular. During the day, it's not as big because it's like it's the desert. You can see everything going on.
Mm.
It's everything is well illuminated and there's not a ton of cover. So you're fine. But some of the like just like camping out or even the most profound fear I have ever felt. And even like things that were like very real where I was right to feel fear. The most visceral fear I've ever felt is we were taking this road trip to Virginia as a family. Is my uncle, Lindsay, my mom, and me. And I think I was like 15 and Lindsay is 12 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we're going through, we'd stopped in Gunnison, Utah, I think it's called, which is like really central in Utah, to visit my cousin. And so once we'd visited him, we'd driven a ways and we were going through Arches National Park, I believe. And we were going through and it's like height of tourist season. So we were like going through all the different, campgrounds and there was just nothing there. We were in our little camper and there was nothing there. So we finally, what we ended up having to do, because it's like 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, is we found this old road, this old dirt road, and we camped out there. And it was a beautiful night. There were stars out. We were inside of our camper. There was my uncle, my mom and my sister and me in there. And there was like no real reason to be afraid. But like, I had such a hard time falling asleep. Like it took like an exerted effort. Like I couldn't even like turn on a light because there's people in there with me. Like it took such an effort to fall asleep because of how afraid I was. And then I remember like having all these like nightmares of like things related to it, where there's like these like Indian spirits coming and telling me to leave. And
I remember you telling me this story.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's still one of the most intense things in my life, where like it's almost kind of messed up where I say I don't believe in the paranormal, because this is one thing where I'm like, oh, maybe the paranormal's real. So I was having all these like nightmares, and like I woke up, I don't know how long I'd been asleep. It hadn't been very long because it was still super dark when I woke up, and was just like I was sitting there like literally like shaking with fear, and like had this urge to like call out for somebody. And that's like not the type of person I am anyway, but like I was like so afraid and just needed to get out of there. And just remember like sitting there on the ground just like petrified, where I was actually like contemplating like getting up and driving to get the heck away from there. And then like my mom woke up and started driving, and I was so relieved when she finally did that. And then it was like I think a few years after the fact where I like we were talking about it, and like I had never brought up the fact like I was having all these nightmares and these feelings. And my mom was like joking about it. She's like, yeah. And I remember like I had to get up and start driving because I was having all these nightmares about like Indian spirits telling us to leave. And it was just like felt super uncomfortable. And so I was like, oh my gosh.
But that's what I mean about.
So there might be something out there. I don't know.
But that's what's funny is Bruce is the only one who hasn't said that he was really uneasy that night. And we've never asked him.
Haven't we?
I haven't.
Maybe
have you?
Next time we see him, maybe we ought to ask him about it. See Because you had the same experience?
Yeah.
Wow.
That was like the only night I didn't sleep that whole trip.
Right. So it was either a experience of mass hysteria, you know, small scale mass hysteria, right. I guess.
Well, I mean, it can happen in families too.
Right. But it was just strange because none of us had been talking. It was literally, we parked there and I think you were either already asleep.
No, I was already asleep when we parked. But when we parked, I woke up.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, that was weird. So
yeah.
So as much as I'm just even for playing devil's advocate for this, saying that it's probably nothing, I can actually, I'll go ahead and I'll throw my hat in the ring of saying that there might be something paranormal out there that lives out there, lives in the woods, lives up in the mountains, that I don't know. I've heard theories about, you know, spirits that feed off of our fear. And that's almost what it feels like, because you almost never actually, you never hear anything about anything coming from these experiences other than people needing to hightail it out there. It's not like they really ever get attacked. Mm-hmm. It is always just like they get freaked out and then they leave and it gets better.
Yeah.
So it is almost like there is a spirit out there that lives and just feeds off of our fears. And,
which is a lot like the Fearless More.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, now that we've all shared our own personal greatest fears moments, it's time for my segment. Yeah. That's right. Steven has a segment now, too.
Yeah.
It's called CryptoZoo News, your place for weekly news around the world.
By weekly, you mean whenever we
exactly. So, for this week, scientists have discovered that when you are breathing, you shouldn't breathe so slow that you are not. That is counterproductive.
Cryptozoology?
And that's the end of my segment.
So the headline is, or I mean, the article is about, like, when you're breathing, make sure you're actually breathing. And
so
Bigfoot is real because
of it. Could you give us an example of what not to do? Like, how do you breathe so slowly that you don't?
Hold your breath, I guess. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not the expert. I wasn't the scientist who discovered this.
I mean, it's sage advice. It's... We're crapping on it, but it's very real.
I'm just really glad that we finally put research into this. Like, it's been an issue for a long time.
Oh my gosh, is that the end?
Like, of the podcast in general or this podcast?
It might be the end of the podcast. All right, follow us at Water Babies Podcast on Instagram. Send us an email at waterbabiespod@gmail.com. Thank you for listening. And Scotland, remember,
Scotland forever!
You didn't plug TikTok?
Oh, yeah.
Water Babies TikTok.
Listen to TikTok Water Babies. Just click on Water Babies TikTok.
Goodbye.